Log Talk Radio.
Works. Okay, this is a very important subject, actually.
so that we can approach money from a holistic perspective, not just from a perspective of what I can buy, what I can accumulate. But exactly what is money and how do we use it so that we can understand that and we can educate our children so we can begin to enter into a realm of wealth development. We can create generational wealth.
Yes.
We're not just talking about making a few extra dollars so that we can dress better, drive better, look better, smell better, and then die in debt. And then leave that debt to our family. No, we don't want to play that. This is that's a game. We want to get out of that and actually build something. So what I want to do just initially, I want to go through a couple of definitions and that I'm going to mention about the definition of money. And I'm going to ask brother Brandon and as well as Sister Kim to elaborate a little bit on those subjects.
All right.
So one of the first things I want to say about money is the definition of money, exactly what is money, which we touched on in our first episode. But we know that when we ask people what is money, most people say money is a means of exchange, right? That's like a big definition of money.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have a very superficial meaning of money. You know what I'm saying? Because when people go to work for money, they work in two or three jobs. Ain't nobody thinking about, oh, let me get on, let me go to work so I can make some means of exchange. Right? People don't think of money like that. Money is more of an emotional attachment. So I was wondering if I could first ask Kim, how does she view money? Does she speak about money in relation to being an emotional attachment?
Well, definitely it is. When you talk about people's money, people get funny. That's just real. But in essence, when you look at the definition of what money is, like you said, it is a an exchange of something, a currency, for one thing for another, right? And for whatever reason, we start to attach personally, like it's mine, you know, I don't want to relinquish it. it's tangible, but it has emotional attachments to it. You know what I'm
That's
saying?
Right. Mm-hmm, for sure.
That's right. It's definitely an emotional trigger. Brandon, can you speak a little bit about that aspect of money as well?
You know, as Kim was saying, that money is tangible. The mindset with money, with a lot of people, have to alter. It's like we see money, we spend money. Oh, I want to work this job to get this amount of money so I can purchase this item. You know, and a lot of times we are not allowing money to work for us. And it's essential that we have the mindset that we allow money to work for us instead of us buying things on an impulse manner. You go to the grocery store and you buy everything you need. You go up in the line and then you see the chocolate bars, gum. You know, different bags of chips, and like, I really don't need this, but this is something that I want. I'm just going to go ahead and buy it. We buy a lot of things off of impulse instead of actually sitting down and mapping things out of, you know, what should we purchase? How much money should I spend when I go into this store? I don't want to go over this limit. I want to make sure that I have a list. How many people actually today shop with a list? How many people today actually go to the ads and look at the different prices and say, okay, I'm going to be organized when I go in here, and I'm not going to just buy off of my emotion, okay? And I'm going to purchase just what I need. A lot of times we don't have that mentality. We go into the stores and we pull out our debit card. We don't even carry cash on us anymore. We take our debit card and we go and just start making a whole bunch of purchases that necessarily we don't need because, you know, the way how a display looks. You know, I mentioned in the last situation that I was a vendor for Intimates. And my job as an Intimates rep was to make sure that my product looked appealing enough so that people can come in and buy my product in an impulse. So now I'm spending all this time building these big, lavish displays that meets the eye. And because of the way how the display looks, a consumer will come in, look at the display, and say, oh, wow, this looks nice. Let me see what I can purchase off of this display. That wasn't on anybody's shopping list. But yet, a lot of us vendors out there can run between $10,000 and $20,000 a week off of selling snacks. And snacks is not a necessity. It's an impulse. So a lot of people do have a mentality of buying in an impulse, but we have to bring ourselves in, all right, and say, this is what I'm going to spend today. This is a list that I'm going to stick to. I am going to have discipline in this list.
Exactly. Exactly. So now, I mean, you touched on quite a few things there. Go ahead, Kim.
And I think the simplest way to put it is this. Money is a means of exchange for products and or services. That's the bottom line. I think that's what people need to understand. You know, you take this coin, this paper dollar bill, this paper bill or whatever for and exchange it for some product or some service. Remember, at one point in time, there used to be a bartering system. We didn't really physically have money. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly. How
have we gotten from bartering to the value, putting value on something so minute? You know, Brandon said it perfectly as far as, you know, having our money work for us instead of today. People are just working day in, day out for money to pay their bills, to pay their mortgage, to pay their car note, you know. We want to get to that point in our lives where we're able to, hey, well, wait a minute. I have this means coming in, whatever it is, whether if it's a little or if it's a lot, but I need to make this work for me. What amount I do have.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That is the platform of taking control. So one of the reasons why I wanted to, I exercise the definition of money is because once you define something, then you can begin to understand it.
That's right.
If you don't have a definition of something and you're just going at it blindly, like Kim was saying, okay, people are working, but do we actually know what are we working for? What is the ultimate of all of this work? Some people are working 2-3 jobs. Some people are working 6 days a week. Some people are working 7 days a week. Then they take that money, and like Kim said, they exchange that money for what? What are we exchanging that money for?
Uh-huh.
We're using our time, effort, energy, sweat, blood. We're separated from our family, separated from our children to get this dollar. Now, what are we going to do with it that will actually be worth all of that effort, energy, and time that we spend accumulating?
That's a good question.
Yes, that's one of the reasons why I want us to go into the definition of money. What does it mean? When we get beyond the dictionary definition of a means of exchange. What is actually driving you as a human being that drives you to get up out of your bed at 5 o'clock in the morning, to get on a bus, people you probably don't like, smell like things you don't like, look like things you don't like. But you go through it all, through the rain, through the humidity, through the snow. You get to that job. You put in that time, effort, energy. Get that paycheck at the end of the week. What are you going to do with it? And is it worth it? I just think we have to, at some point, come to question that. Like, what is the ultimate goal? If you ask people what they're working for, they're going to say, I'm working for money. And that's the question. So if you're working for money, what does it look like if you attain this thing that you've been working for? And how long do you have to work for it before you attain it? If you have no clear vision, you're going to work until the grave for this imaginary thing called money. Because bills are never going to
be enough. It'll never be enough.
You got that right.
Exactly. So without pumping those brakes, reviewing this subject, reviewing your relationship with money, setting some goals.
That's it.
Setting a plan, creating a strategy as to how I'm spending my time, effort, energy, and how am I going to accomplish this goal. It's going to be useless and fruitless. And I mean, I could just see from my own position at the age of 59, having, you know, I've seen two generations behind me, and I've seen people work and work and work and work to their death. They were working when they died, basically, or some of them, by the time they died, they had, you know, some type of dementia or something, but they didn't accumulate anything. They didn't really get to pass on anything. So I think we have to question that.
What do they have to show for it?
Exactly. We have to question that. Definitely have to question that. So, therefore, money, even though it is a physical thing and a thing that we're working and exchanging, it also has its esoteric aspects to it. And those are the things that we want to shed some light on. What's behind the money? What are we actually trying to, even when we work for money, what are we actually trying to attain?
Accomplish.
Okay, so I just want to touch on one more definition of money, and I would like to ask each of you if you could speak a little bit on that, and then we'll go into another aspect. But another definition of money for me is that money is an addiction, a very deep, strong addiction. Could you speak to that, Kim, about money being an addiction?
Yes, I can. And I think many people will be able to relate to, like I'll give the example of my 18-year-old when she first got her first little job, and she had it calculated as to how much money she was supposed to be making and what she was supposed to be paid. And when she got that actual paycheck, hysterically, Mom, something's wrong. I don't think they paid me all that I'm supposed to get. Because she wasn't taking in the account of, okay, well, wait a minute. Uncle Sam, she has to pay taxes and deductions and things like that. And even now, each job that she's had since then, I got to make at least $8 an hour. Oh, no, I'm not settling for less than $9 an hour. I said, hold up, pump your brakes. You have no experience. You can't just think you're going to go get a job that's going to pay you a whole bunch of money without any experience. And I think people in general, and I'm talking about myself too, because I've been there, you know, that, oh, well, wait a minute. I know I have X, Y, and Z that I'm responsible for, family, bills, mortgage. I need to bring home this certain amount of money So you gear your plans and what you're looking for, the jobs that you're looking towards to tailor that, what you need, or in your mind, what you think you need. So the addiction part comes in at, well, wait a minute, I need more. It's not enough. I need more. I need more. I need more. And you're doing and taking more and more time away from whatever your why, your reasoning. Some people say their family. I want to make sure that I allot them to go to college. But you're taking the time away from that. And I believe that's where the addiction comes in at.
Okay.
What do you think, Brandon?
Hey, you know what? You hit it right, the nail on the head. You know, money is truly an addiction. It's like you work and you have money, and then when you see money start to run out, oh, I need some more. You start like trying to scrape money from here and scrape money from there. It's that we have to be drawn to money as well. Some of us, you'd be surprised, we actually repel money. And with that, you know, like, oh, I don't need no money. You know, I don't have the mentality that I don't care. Money come and money go. And guess what? You know, hey, I heard a wise man say, money and a fool will soon part. But, you know, with this, you know, those of us that are hungry and have something that we want to look forward to, we're always looking for avenues to generate money. We need money. We need money for this. We need money for that. And we just keep on thriving, you know, until we get to the point. And I'll tell you the truth. When it comes to money, and y'all can correct me if it apply to you, that you can never not have enough money. You always want, you know, you want a surplus. You want a plethora of funds allocated in your account that is tangible, that you can use at any time.
Oh, yeah, that'll allot you.
Y'all agree with me?
I agree.
Absolutely.
It'll allot you to be able to do things that money answer. They say money answer of all things, right?
That's it.
And this society today, you can't get anywhere without it. And it's nothing wrong with, like, there's the debate of, oh, you love money more than anything. And I'm not saying that by no means, but money allots for us to do the necessities within our society, within our families, within our communities, because you need money. It's nothing in life for free.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So in that perspective, that addiction for money that people have, that we have, is based on the economy, and it's based on the world economy. We live in a world economy, okay? There's a World Bank, for instance, okay? There's the International Monetary Fund. Within this country, we have the Federal Reserve that controls the supply of money that's in the economy. So therefore, I say financial intelligence and financial literacy means to understand the big picture of money and how we relate to money. As Tim was saying, as Brandon was saying, there is a need. We have a need for money. If you live on planet Earth, you have to pay rent to be here, period. Wherever you are, you're going to have to pay to be here. So that's something which is, that's a law. Period. I mean, even if there was no such thing as money, as Kim alluded to earlier, there's a barter system, which would have been more of a natural economy. But even in a barter system, you have to be productive. If we're going to trade goods, you got to have some goods.
That's right.
If you don't have no goods, what you going to trade?
Can't trade
right.
them looks.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And have something that they need. It can't be a whole bunch of garbage that you have.
Exactly. So the economy is based on supply and demand. And eventually, the European system arose whereby they're creating a currency which is being used as a means of exchange. But as you mentioned, in reality, the money is not the real goal. The only reason why people want money is they can get the things that they can buy with the money. What good would it do if you had $1 million locked up in a room and you were locked up in the room with $1 million and you had no food, you had no water, you had no relationship? What would be the value of that? Let's say you were locked in a room with $1 billion. What value would there be?
There would be.
There wouldn't
Nothing.
Be any.
No, you can't eat it.
Mm-mm.
You can't love it. You can't talk to it. Money is an inanimate object, a means of exchange that we use. But as we mentioned, there are many different layers to that, the emotional aspect, the addiction to money. So the other ultimate aspect of money is money is an addiction. Money is a drug. You see, that people are addicted just trying to acquire it. But because they're not putting it in its proper perspective, they never really accomplish what they're trying to accomplish. So just working and working for money is never going to bear any ultimate fruits. Okay? So it has to be put into its proper perspective in relation to a goal, a plan, a strategy. And the whole concept of working for money must be addressed. Do we want to continue working for money, or do we want to learn how to use money as a tool so that it benefits us? So that the money is working for me. And this is not just a cute saying. It's not just some cute fad now. Oh, yeah, money works for me. Yeah. You know, make a song out of it. You know, for money working for me. No, it's an actual fact that our relationship with money must be renovated so that money works for us. There are four things I want to talk about that go against our cultivation of money, four things that eat away or corrode our money. And I just want to touch on those and ask each of you to touch on those.
All right.
The first thing I want to touch on is penalties. Okay? Penalties that we receive. Bank penalties. Credit card penalties, penalties from the IRS, how these different things are corroding our money. Could you speak a little bit to that, Brandon?
Yes. So, bank penalties is in some different accounts, you know, not every account, because there are some free accounts, but in some accounts, if you don't have a minimum in that account, whatever dollar it is, $250 I've seen, all right, that there is a penalty for you dropping underneath that balance. Now, when it comes to, all right, so that's for like the banking portion. So there's also penalties and or fees if you have an account and you have overdrawn, you know, this account. Now,
talk about that a little bit more. Say that again. Overdrawn.
And I want to tell you as far as this, that some banks actually target lower income people because no, they won't have a whole surplus of money in an account, and they will be able, what some banks do, they go actually to the Forex market and the cryptocurrency market and actually invest your money that you have put into this bank account. Now, but they also target, like I said, lower income people that don't have a lot of money in the account, because now you will get what you call overdraft fees. So now with this, you have direct deposit coming into that account, and I know it should be somebody else that knows this as well, that when, say, for example, you get pressed on your last dollar and you need to fill up your car, what do people do? They go to the bank, or they go to the gas station, they'll put the card in, they'll put it on credit, and the credit takes a dollar hold. And you can go ahead and fill your car up off of that $1 that's in that account. Now that you have done that, you have what's going to happen is after that money hits your account, your account is now in the negative. And once your account is in the negative, if you don't put money in there right away to bring that up, they're going to penalize you. And charge you, maybe every bank is different, might be $35, might be $39 fee for being overdrawn. And what happens is, like, okay, well, you know, I needed to get over, you know, and I needed the gas. And of course you need gas if you need to go to work. But we have to strive to avoid these penalties. We have to actually write a plan. Hey, you know that you're not going to have a lot of extra money coming in this month, okay, or this particular week, because you have all these bills that you have to pay. Hey, let's sit down and actually write a plan, okay, so that we are not spending money that we don't have. And to tell you the truth, for someone that has even a credit card, as an average credit card with people with, you know, sub-average credit, it's like 25%, 24%. So say, for example, you have a credit card. Say that again?
I said 24.99%.
That's right.
And you go and you make these purchases on this credit card. And they're like, oh, I need this and I need that. You know, this has to happen. This has to happen. And, hey, I'm just going to – I know I don't have it, so I'm just going to fall back on this credit card. Now, guess what? It's a lot of things that you are actually encountering by doing that. So, number one – you have an interest rate that is very high. Going back to Rule 72, you have the number 72, you divide it by that 24%, and that equals 3 years for your debt to double. So every 3 years, by you using money that you don't have and you're maxing it out, you have to, your debt doubles in 3 years. So that in itself, that high interest rate, it's a penalty.
Absolutely.
It's so sad. And what happens is that we'll go ahead and then we'll max out our credit cards and, oh, I don't know what to do. But then guess what else happens once you go in and max out that credit card? Now you are getting a poor credit rating. Your credit is now the FICO score is now diminishing, because now you have a balance. All right, if you have a, I'm just throwing it out there, $10,000 credit card. If you have $11,000, you're going to be penalized for that. And now, what does that mean? When you go out there to make big purchases, when you're out there going to finance something, you are actually going to pay more than a person with a good credit score.
That's right. That is correct. Because your interest rate will be high.
The interest rate will be higher.
Go ahead, Ken.
Go ahead.
And that's one thing that mainstream, most people don't even think about, you know, the effects of your credit rating, what interest rates are. You know, I've done many of presentations just talking and educating individuals about, you know, how money works. You know, and the common question is, oh, what's that? Well, why is that important? Oh, you have to understand it because now you start realizing, oh, do I need it or do I want it? You know, is it really worth it compared to, you know, we live in a society today where we want what we want and we want it yesterday, you know, instant, you know, the microwave world, you know, and, oh, I can pay for it later. No problem, right? But when you start looking and understanding, okay, if I pay for this later, you're talking about a 25% interest rate. And, you know, on average, most Americans, we're talking about 16% interest rate. You know, if you're somewhat okay, right? That's still high.
That's still high.
You know, and then when you're paying that actual money back, you're like, well, wait a minute. I'm paying this back two times over because they only told me I only had to pay the minimum balance, which is $25, $30 a month. But with that compounding interest, you start understanding, well, wait a minute. That $10,000 becomes $20. $20 becomes $40. $40 becomes $80. This is how Americans are in debt. This, our country that's the richest country in the world, but we're so much in debt. We're the poorest, you know? And I think that if people start to really analyze and realize, you know, the importance of what it is that we have and how it actually works, how it benefits what it is that I'm trying to do, you know, based off of the plan that I have in place, like you said, Brandon, you know, will be in, most people will be in a better standing. You know, you have to, you really have to look at that. Once you start, I didn't get that until my late 30s. I didn't understand that. But if I would have knew this well on my early 20s, oh, I would be in such better place. And I think that's the most majority of Americans. And that's why I'm very adamant about educating and the importance of, you know, this financial literacy, being educated and knowing really what money is, how it actually works, how it's going to benefit me, and if I do X, Y, and Z, what are the repercussions of that?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the essence, as Kim is saying, the essence of this show, which is financial intelligence, which is to inject you with financial intelligence. And it takes time. Kim was saying, you know, this whole microwave type of talent. Everybody thinks they want everything you need. Financial intelligence is not something, oh, you take, you know, a seminar and now you're a financial expert. You took a seminar. This is something which must be applied and studied throughout one's life. Because as we go through life, our demands change, our responsibilities change, our financial situation changes. This is a dynamic process. It's not something that, okay, I took a course or two, or when I was in, you know, high school, I took a financial literacy course, or I took a course in college. It's not about that. It's about actual application and providing solutions, because we're going to be challenged every day. Just like recently, a new tax bill just came out. So even as a tax professional, I'm a tax professional, but now I have to study the new tax bill to understand how I could get the benefit for my client. It's not that I could just, oh, okay, well, I know about tax. I know how to do the tax return, and now I can just go to sleep. No, it's an ongoing process.
So that's one of the services that we provide. And right now, I want to provide you with a message that describes what that service is. We'll be right back.
Greetings, my people. Power up. This is Stephen Hutchinson of Financial Intelligence. I have a company called Power Tax. And in Power Tax, we do your taxes expertly and accurately, but we also answer your questions to help you understand what's going on within your tax return. And the result of that is that your financial intelligence shall multiply. Your financial literacy will increase. So reach out. We do tax returns for all 50 states. Consequently, you do not have to come to my office, but you can reach out to us at PowerTax.com. That's PowerTax with two X's, PowerTax.com. Or you can reach us at 610-955-6508. That's 610-955-6508. I implore to you, don't go to strangers. Reach out to PowerTax. And remember, be powerful.
Welcome back to Financial Intelligence. Stephen Hutchinson, your host, accompanied by my co-host, Mr. Brandon Tate. And we have been going through the process very thoroughly and in a very elaborate way, explaining. We've done a little bit about the definition of money, the purpose of money, utility of money. This is very important. This is not to be skipped over. Mind you, I can practically guarantee you that many of the subjects that we go through thoroughly, you will not find in other, even financial literacy courses, especially like courses, economics courses, finance courses in the university, don't even go through this aspect of financial literacy. I actually interviewed a person who has a master's degree in finance, and she worked in corporate America for a number of years. So I asked her, I guess it was kind of presumptuous of her, but I asked her, if after getting your master's degree in financial in finance and working in corporate America, were you financially literate? And you know what she said?
Yes. No.
No. That's right, Kim. You got it. No.
And you got to understand this.
Go ahead, Kim.
I'm sorry. And you have to understand why we have not been taught. I mean, people are spending money, and I'm not knocking education because I'm an educator at heart, believe me. But society is about supply and demand, number one. And if we have a community of illiterate people, when it comes to money, their finances, then there's an opportunity for more money to be made. You know, you'd be surprised. There are only 5 states in the United States, our richest country in the world, that requires personal financial literacy or a personal financial course before you even graduate.
Graduate.
5 states.
That's right.
And we. Out of 50. How many states do we have?
And this is the 21st century.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Now, if we could understand this as babies, you think about it. Hey, what if we were teaching this in grade school? By the time somebody graduates high school, they'll understand how their money really works and be off to a better start. So when they do go to college and they're pushing those credit cards, oh yeah, you can get this credit card. Oh, but I don't have a job.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but you have student loans, so you can use that as income. You know, and it's just pushed to be in debt.
That's right.
So,
and that's the validation.
Go ahead, Kim.
We have to take a personal, you know, personally, you know, indoctrinate ourselves and our children the importance and the value of what money is. Because if we don't, we're hurting our society. We're hurting the next generation.
That's right.
Absolutely.
You're locking your children into the bottom rung of the economy. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's what we're doing by not educating them, by just shuffling them off on some bus, go to school and come back as a genius. Yeah, it don't work like that.
You know, it's so funny. I was talking with my mother-in-law, and I was talking with, you know, some other different people. And, you know, what would you do, you know, if you were just given a large lump sum of money? Where will you allocate those funds?
A lot of people
will say, I want to pay off my bills. I just want to go ahead and just pay off all of my bills. Even if I don't have anything left, at least I'll be debt-free. And people have a mentality like that. I heard some people say, hey, I only live once. I want to go to Florida. I want to go travel to across the world. But, okay, I understand that you want to do things. I understand that, you know, that you want to pay off, you know, all of your bills. But with that being said, if you take a lump sum of money just to pay off all your bills, do you think that you're not going to have any more bills the following month?
What would you do?
Now, if you were to take that money and invest it into something that will generate passive income to take care of that, those bills. Now, once those bills are gone and you still have your monthly expenses, you'll still have passive income still coming in. Now you are allowing your money to actually work for you.
And
I just thought that was very interesting that I just went and just the different people that I was talking to, the mindset is, hey, I'm going to take this money and I'm going to travel. I'm going to take this money and I'm going to, you know, pay this off and pay that off. We should have the mentality that, hey, I want to make this money work for me because, you know, after that, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 is gone, that's it. But now you will have some leveraging power. Okay, now let me go ahead and get an asset. And the object is to have an asset to cover your liabilities.
So if you have more passive income coming in, then you have debt or liabilities.
Hey, you're on the win side of it. And now you have a consistent stream of income coming in because you actually put your money where it should be, where it's working for you, rather just dumping it all away and now it's nothing out there to work for you.
Absolutely. And that's one of the ways in which Robert Kiyosaki, one of my favorite mentors, teachers, he's the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He defines wealth as the amount of time that wealth is related to time. How long can you survive if you didn't work anymore? If you stop working today, how long can you survive based on your accumulated assets? First thing, if you don't know what an asset is, you're not financially literate. That's the first thing.
I think you need to say that again.
Yes, if you do not know what an asset is, you are not financially literate. And that's not meant to be an insult. It's just that financial literacy, like any other subject, has a vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
Which you need to understand in order to penetrate the subject. Just like if you're going to be a chemist, there's certain words you need to know and understand and utilize so you can communicate. If you're an accountant,
You need certain terminology. If you're a doctor, you're a carpenter, you're whatever field that you're in, if you work a cash register, you know, you need to know what the debit button is and what the credit button is. It's just definition and the etymology that you need. So in finance, to understand assets, another definition of money is that money is an asset. Okay? So there's another definition of money. That's why I say money is many dimensional. It's multidimensional. It's not just something that we put in our pocket, that we work for, that we get, and we go buy something shiny and put it on and, you know, go out, you know, have a toast, you know, knock on your back and like, hey, that's beautiful. There's so much more to it. No, money is an asset. And what does that mean? Money is an asset. What does that mean? What is an asset? Because basically what we do with money is we take money, which is an asset, and we trade money for another asset. Right? Or we're trading money, which is an asset, for a liability, which is a problem. So to understand the difference between an asset and a liability is essential. Because and as Robert Kiyosaki explained in Rich Dad Poor Dad, keeping it very simple, he says an asset is something that increases money for you and puts money in your pocket.
Exactly.
So an asset is something that puts money in your pocket. A liability is something that takes money out of your pocket. And if you just keep that basic fundamental definition, you begin to understand how your money is affecting you, how the way you're using your money is affecting you. Were you going to say something, Kim?
No, I just laughed. I said, children, it could be a liability. It could be an asset.
That's right.
Bob, I didn't say
That's right. I mean, looking at it from a financial perspective, bringing a child into a family is not bringing money in. The child is going to be on the liability side of the balance sheet. If we simplify it, there's a financial statement called a balance sheet. Okay? And to understand a balance sheet, it's just a T. If you make a T, a letter T, and on the left side, write the word asset. On the right side, write the word liability. And what you do is you list all of your assets under the asset column on the left side. That would be whatever, checking account, savings account, whatever you own, a flat screen TV, a cell phone, anything that you can liquidate and turn into money, you put it on the asset side. And everything that you owe, you put on the liability side. So, for instance, you may put your car on the asset side because, well, if I sell my car, I could get $500 for it. But if I owe $3,000 on that car, that $3,000 goes on the liability side. You see? So my liability of that car is more than the asset value of that car. You see, and then we're getting into some of the basic dynamics of understanding how money works. Okay, now we're getting into about the last 5 minutes of the show. So we went through a few things. We also wanted to touch on two more things because Brandon and Kim both elaborated on fees and penalties. There were two more I wanted to touch. I don't know if we get to touch both of them, but we were touching on the different things that are eroding your money, that's eating away at your money that you don't even really think about. Right? It's like invisible. Your money sitting in a bank, but the bank is saying, ha, they made a late payment, hit them with that. We don't think, we're not, you know, they don't call us on the phone and say, hey, we're getting ready to do it.
No, they slap that thing right on there as fast as you can blink your eyes.
That's right. And then when you look at your bank statement, you realize, oh, my God, they just took $35 out of my account.
Mm-hmm. And then one thing that I didn't even mention, that with those fees that are hit, now let's say that it's been a period of time that lapses that your account has been in the negative. Then a lot of
there's another fee.
There's another fee. A lot of banks have a continuing overdraft fee. So it might be for every day that is in the negative, some banks might charge $7. Some banks might charge $10 a day. $10 a day for using their money. Now they're getting you real good. So now if you get direct deposit and you're getting paid, you start getting you get paid on a Friday and you're getting these overdrafts, extended overdrafts on a Monday. Now we're talking about 5 days, okay, $50 in addition to the initial overdraft fee for for using their money. So now you can spend almost up to $100. And that's if you're getting paid weekly. Imagine them people that get paid bi-weekly and they're living from paycheck to paycheck. I'm sorry, that's
absolutely.
But,
absolutely. Look at this.
This is the real stuff that we have to start thinking about and start talking about, you know. When we think about money, has always been, talking about money has always been a taboo. You don't ask the person how much they make. You don't ask
right.
the person how much they spend, you know, but we have to get real and start talking about it, you know.
As a matter of fact, Kim, I'm sorry, I just wanted to say, because what you're saying, on jobs, they tell people, one of the employees in Wawa was telling me, because I was asking them about the profit sharing in Wawa,
mm-hmm.
and they said, they told me that on the job, they are not allowed to discuss who gets paid what with the other employee. Not allowed.
How about that?
To your point. Go ahead.
You know, so if we talk about it and not make it a taboo, I think we start changing people's mindsets and mentalities that, oh, well, wait a minute. If we start talking about ways that we can keep a majority of what it is that we make, you know, because I'm a Warren Buffett fan, and he always
mm-hmm.
says the first rule is to never lose money, right?
Right.
And the
mm-hmm.
second rule is to never forget rule number one. So you have to always be thinking about, where is there a loss? Am I losing out somewhere?
That's
and
right.
talking
mm-hmm.
about the things that corrode and eat away of that, you know, we didn't even get to mentioning inflation or
taxation.
That's
the number one. See, that's mm-hmm. right at the top of my chart.
Right.
But I did it. I worked the chart backwards. Inflation, we didn't even get to, we're not going to even get to touch that one today. But go ahead, Ken.
You know, but people have to realize inflation is that invisible taxation. It's not a taxation,
exactly.
But, you know.
Yes, it is.
What
right.
Yeah,
right.
It is.
Right.
It,
yeah.
A taxation. Milk is not
mm-hmm.
the same as it was 5 years ago. I can remember when bread was 99 cents, a loaf of bread. Now we're talking about almost $4.
That's right.
You know, so the value is not there. So these are just some things that we have to talk about, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to be on this platform and really just talk about that so people are not afraid. And real questions that people may have that, hey, let's talk about it. Let's get it out in the open.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way. The best way to overcome your enemy is to see your enemy. If your enemy is invisible, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. You can't allow your enemy to be invisible.
You must always bring your enemy into view so you can see what my enemy is doing. Okay, and that is essential. So that's a part of financial intelligence. We're going to pretty much wrap it up at this point. This has been a second installment of How Money Works with Financial Intelligence with your host, Stephen Hutchinson, and co-host, Mr. Brandon Tate, and co-host, Ms. Kim Williams. We will continue bringing you these installments. Our basic schedule is every other week, but this is a podcast, so you don't have to worry about it. Even if you don't make it to the show as it is functioning live, the podcast is available. And we will be creating facilities so that we will be sending out the podcast to all our listeners and to all of our people who we provide services to. Mind you, we provide a number of services. Brandy can tell you a little bit about the services that we offer in insurance.
All right, in insurance, Jeff, I'm going to be quick because I know we ran out of time. But we offer a wide variety of products. We have a typical term policy that, you know, if you just want a lot of death benefit for a little money, you know, for just a certain period of time, we have that kind of coverage. We have whole life, affordable whole life coverage as well. All right, that actually is not for a term, but is for the duration of your life up until age 100. We also offer IULs, which is called an Index Universal Life Insurance Policy, that now you have an opportunity to invest money into this account and actually be able to supplement your retirement and pull out the money tax-free. We also offer annuities with income riders, life riders on it, that you will never outlive your money.
Okay, that's right. You heard it right here, Financial Intelligence. We don't just theoretically discuss problems and talk about problems. We discuss the problem, and we provide solutions, and we provide the product or service that you need to solve that problem. Therefore, we provide you with income tax services. We provide you with insurance products, and we provide you with financial literacy instruction and courses. So please take advantage, take full advantage of this, and I would like to give you some time to my producer, Mr. Beverly Black of Gumbo for the Soul, also a Tribe Family Channel, as well as to Bruce George of CommonIsGenius.com. So welcome everyone again, and we're about to sign off, and stay focused. And be powerful. This is Financial Intelligence. Signing off.
Good night.